in the box office battle. I'm Biggs.
I'm Brennan.
And I'm Carl.
Guest star Ian in the house.
Nice, you introduced yourself. Ian came to sit in for Brandon, and it's super fucking awkward because Brandon showed up.
Materialized from in my corporeal form.
It's as if my balls are hanging out and there's a girl on my bed and my wife just walked in.
Oh, God.
Again?
It's just like that. So tonight we are doing movies about creating women.
Just a bad concept.
Full on misogyny.
I'll be honest. I'm just going to lay it out really quick how I came to that, because you started with Weird Science. I'm doing the Stepford Wives. Basically, my wife came up with the theme because I was really struggling to figure it out. First, I thought Oingo Boingo. And then I looked at the stuff they did soundtracks on and I was like, no.
No.
And then I was like, okay, Danny Elfman. And then I looked at his stuff and I was like, way too popular. Wouldn't work for the show.
Right.
It's like, can't do the Avengers. Already did the Avengers anyway. We broke from formula like years ago and did that. And so I was just like, what the fuck am I going to do? And I kept thinking and I went down. I was like, movies where computers are misunderstood, of which there's a lot of them. And I started going through them and I'm like, the ones that I really want to do, we've already done or don't work. And then like, there's a lot of them I just never heard of and I didn't want to roll the dice. I wanted to come up with something good. And eventually Amanda was like, she came up with like a couple of crazy themes that didn't work. She kept going back to robots over and over again.
Robots.
And I don't know why she kept going back to robots, but eventually she said the Stepford Wives when she was thinking robots. And I was like, no, that would actually work because they're creating women. So that's where I settled on for the theme.
I just wish you'd picked Ex Machina. Then we could have actually watched a good movie.
Yeah, I just did that on a cosmic void. I'm not doing it again. I'm fucked out on that one.
Yeah,
for a
I'll
while.
Go first. Weird Science is a movie that I tricked myself into remembering was good because of my horniness for Kelly LeBrock and my, and the fact that Oingo Boingo is one of my top three favorite bands of all time. It's about two horny little bastards with zero redeeming qualities who just want to get laid. And they decide, because they're nerds that have a computer, that they're going to build a girl. And they do this by scanning photographs and pages of books into
a paper shredder.
Thank you. They totally
and
hacked
they need a lot of power, so they like hack into
the Defense Department
to get power. Or something?
Yeah.
Bandwidth?
Because you know how if you hack somebody else's modem, then like you get more energy? You know how that works?
They're rubbing a genie lamp, basically, and creating a genie. Science is magic in this. It's not just made by people that don't understand computers. It's made by people that like aggressively don't give a fuck about how computers work.
Like they had the chance to learn and they just chose not to.
Oh, I can't even imagine if John Hughes was alive today.
Hughes is alive.
Is he alive?
No, he's not.
No, he's dead. He died
over a decade ago.
Yeah, quite a while ago. He couldn't live in a world like this that we live in today.
No.
Twitch? No. Can you imagine him with Twitch?
I'll be honest, because I am very familiar with John Hughes, not just through his movies, but through his National Lampoon articles, of which he has three that are kind of big still. One is called My Penis, which is a woman waking up with a penis. Pretty much goes the way you think it would go.
Helicopter.
Another is called My Vagina. Vagina, where a guy wakes up with a vagina, pretty much goes the way you think it would go. And then the last one, which I think is probably the creme de la creme of his writings in National Lampoon, is Vacation 64, which gets turned to National Lampoon's Vacation. However, the big difference is it's told from the point of view of Rusty. And at the very end of it, his dad freaks out and winds up shooting Walt Disney to death.
Well, that's nonsense.
You know when when the Walt Disney stand-in comes in and like Clark starts talking to him and he decides to not press charges. Clark flips out and executes him. Like,
Like, is there anyone in this world that would not want to execute Walt Disney? Let's be 100% honest with ourselves here. Given the chance, I would absolutely shoot Walt Disney in the head.
Wow.
Coming out strong.
Well, he was an anti-Semite.
He was an aggressive anti-Semite.
So anyways, they create this girl with a computer. And they wear bras on their heads for no reason.
It's ceremony.
Science, man.
They say ceremony.
Yeah, they're like, bras are like the science equivalent of wearing a wizard hat.
The worst part is, where did they get those bras?
Yeah, there's, I guess.
Who is it? It's Wyatt and who else? Who's the other kid?
Gary.
It's Gary's mom. It has to be. It has to be Gary's mom.
Wasn't it at Wyatt's house, so it had to be Wyatt's mom.
Isn't Wyatt Anthony Michael Hall?
Anthony Michael Hall is Wyatt.
No, I thought Anthony...
So it's the other kid who went on to do nothing as far as I know.
Gary is the brunette kid.
Are we sure?
Yeah,
I'm positive. Just watched this movie last night. I'm almost certain.
It doesn't matter. It's whoever's house they're at. Yeah. It's their mom's.
Like, yeah, that's... and that's not better.
Oh, yes. Already off to a great start. Forgettable characters. Let's go.
So she then proceeds, once she poofs into existence after the door breathes a bunch and then explodes, she's standing there all sexy-like in her half shirt and her underpants. And Kelly LeBrock is in peak physical condition in this movie. I mean, I'll tell you what.
This is the peak of the movie, to be clear.
Yeah.
They made it the poster.
Takes a shower with them, and they are lame. But, I mean, the fact
they're wearing swimsuits.
And that's supposed to be what makes them lame, is that they couldn't be naked together in a shower with an adult woman. And they're 15 years old.
It was the 80s. You know, like, they just had to sample their mom's cocaine stash, and then they would have been right 80s. There.
Right. Then they, like, go to the mall or something, and there's these two girls. They single out at the beginning of the movie just seemingly at random. I don't think they know these girls' names. In the opening sequence of the film, the two of them are standing looking into the gym at the girls that are stretching, and they're explaining what's going to happen at the end of the movie word for word. They're literally saying, like, we're going to throw a party, and then some bad guys are going to show up and we'll fight them off, and then those two girls are going to fall in love with us. And then those two girlfriends' boyfriends, who are played by some guy I don't know, and Robert Downey Jr.,
yeah, with, the only important with, like, face of the movie
are yeah. like
and with eye makeup
come up behind them and are listening to them tell this story to each other out loud about how they're going to get laid with these two girls that are these guys' girlfriends. So their reaction is to just pants them and then call out so all the girls look, and then the boys are just standing there being awkward and stupid.
Before you go on, let me ask you a quick question. So do you think that because Dr. Doolittle bombed so hard that maybe you can get Robert Downey Jr. in a Cobra Kai style like remake of Weird Science where like they were done wrong by Wyatt and Gary?
I mean, they're still owed a girl.
Yeah, all they have is a missile. That's not fair.
Man, no, they didn't even get the missiles. The missiles got all erased from history when she snapped her fingers at the end and just erased everything.
Because of science.
Because she's the genius.
She is science.
Now, the more I thought about this movie after I finished it, which they go through, and again, they have a party, and at one point they go to a bar and hang out with a bunch of black folks, and then Wyatt gets all drunk and starts talking like a black guy.
Dude, yeah,
which is really awkward.
I noted that scene because
age well at all.
If you look at the dude with the mustache sitting next to him, I can tell what's running through his head, and it's like, I'm not going to smack him because I'm going to get my SAG card, so I'm just going to sit here and nod like I'm supposed to.
Am I seriously in this movie right now?
Yeah.
Like, what the fuck? And there's one of my favorite scenes is actually when Lisa, that's the name of the girl they create, and they name her after a girl that a dude had a crush on that kicked him in the nuts.
Yup.
What the fuck? They go to Wyatt's parents' house to, like, get him permission to go somewhere. But because she's clearly an adult woman, it leads to a very awkward exchange between the parents and them.
Because they're 15 and she's 23, I think is what they say.
Yeah, and the dad, Al, he finally gets fed up and he's like, I'm going to call the cops. And then she says, don't you mess with me, Al, and jabs him in the chest. And I really like that part of the movie. Like, just that one sequence with her where she's jabbing her finger into his chest, yelling at him. I really like that for some reason. It's satisfying to watch her do that. But then she pulls a gun and puts it in his face, and then they leave, and turns into a running joke where he's freaking out because she pulled a gun on his parents, and she's like, oh no, it's fine. And then it cuts back and they're calmly reading, and then the wife is like, hey, what's up with our son? The dad's just like, who's Gary? Who are you talking about? Shut up. And it keeps cutting back to them throughout the movie, and she's desperate to get him to remember his son, and he just keeps telling her to shut up. Like, leave me alone. What are you talking about?
I don't know, son. That the funniest joke in that entire movie is the fact that the parent forgot the forgettable character of the movie.
That is the funniest part of the whole movie, is the dad forgetting his son exists.
Let me ask you a question really quick, Ian. So having come into this movie fresh, who do you think the star of this movie was? Like, who do you think the actor that everybody was going to watch in this movie?
I don't know very much about the release of this movie or anything.
That's why I'm asking you. So you're the perfect person to ask. Who do you think who do you think was the guy that, like, everybody's like, oh, so-and-so's in a movie? I need to see it.
The big draw.
It was absolutely the blonde kid. The one that's played in The Breakfast Club and 16 Candles.
All right, you're right.
All of the other movies that I've seen. Hall. Yeah. And I don't know his name because I never cared because
they're old as shit.
Sorry, man. Yeah, I don't watch a lot of 80s movies, unfortunately. The fact that I know those is solely because my friends watch 80s movies. But yeah, absolutely. He was the first one I recognized and the only one I recognized other than Robert Downey Jr. Bill Paxton and the guy from The Hills Have Eyes. Those are like the only...
I was just going to mention that Bill Paxton is the older brother of Gary.
His first feature film.
Who is home from military school and is just a complete asshat in his own right. The thing about this that's funny is that Gary and Wyatt have no redeeming qualities. Like, at no point is there ever a scene that demonstrates that they are good in any way, but everybody around them is so much worse.
Yep.
That is like what they use to sort of make you sympathetic towards the main characters. And to be honest, that fucking worked on me when I was a kid. This movie worked for me when I was 15.
And you know what? It also works because it's a constant 80s trick. Like, we grew up in an era where, like, they did that all the time. Like, every teen sex comedy, they're just fucking terrible at the center of it. But almost everybody around them, except for maybe the good girl that they wind up with, are always infinitely worse. Than those
well,
people.
Like Home Alone, that kid has no redeeming qualities. But no, everybody else terrible. Is a criminal. So
he's somehow smart they're enough to like
trying to actively
house.
Murder him. And even though he technically succeeds in murdering them all several times over with like blunt force trauma, and
I would add that he winds up sympathizing with the guy next door who he believes is a serial killer in Home Alone. Yeah. So not a good look for Kevin. I'm just saying.
I think the most egregious example of 80s movies is probably Revenge of the Nerds.
Yeah, dude. That, you know what sucks about that? There is like a really good message at that core, but it's also like sexual assault's okay.
I have literally never bothered to watch a single one of those movies.
Yeah, it's fine.
It does not seem worth
I mean,
the
John
effort.
Goodman's pretty good in Revenge of the Nerds, but like, you know, there's some good performances. There's a good message at its core, but there's a lot of shit around it where it's like, it's too problematic. To watch anymore.
If this one aged as poorly as it did, then that one's not going to be good.
Oh, it's worse.
Gates.
Yeah, Revenge of the Nerds has aged worse than Weird Science.
Work.
Yeah.
But like the brother, at one point after the party, where in order to create the conflict, the boys need to rise above and become the macho whatever bullshit passes for being a man in this show. And summoning like, okay, so the Hills Have Eyes guys in that. But the main guy that, like, does all the talking, that is the guy from Mad Max, The Road Warrior, the second one. That's the guy. Like, they got the guy from the second Mad Max
movie.
Oh,
in the hockey mask?
No. The second-in-command guy he has the exact same hair, and everything is exactly, it's the guy.
I literally just watched that movie, like, 4
Road Warrior guy. Villain, Road Warrior villain. He's in the movie for some reason. Like, nobody in the party was like, wait, why is the guy from the Road Warrior here. Like, they just brought him right out of the movie. But they fight them off, and it's, like, really stupid. And then they get to go to bed. I don't think they do anything, really, besides kiss these girls. But they get to, like, go to sleep with them and sleep in the same bed.
Good, innocent, heartwarming romance.
And they pair off with the same hair color. So the two blonde kids.
So you can tell whose is whose.
The two blonde girls are awoken.
Color coding.
Like Wyatt and the blonde girl are awoken by Bill Paxton literally pointing a rifle or a shotgun or something directly into their faces, like smushing their faces with the gun and like smacking them on
like
the head with the barrel.
Oh, he's like putting it up his nose
with
the barrel,
like,
right?
It's fucked. That's a fucked up thing to do. You don't play with guns like that.
God, that's no. Why he's a piece of shit.
It's just insane. And then that's when Lisa turns him into a living pile of shit.
I think.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
And who can also, like, extend his tongue out and catch flies in midair, because you know how shit can do that.
And they so what was the better shit demon, the one in Weird Science or the one in Dogma?
I'd say the one in Weird Science was more formidable for me because it was first.
Touche.
Yeah.
But I mean,
it kind of also looked like Pizza the Hut.
a little bit. It was like you had to actually kind of use your imagination more to tell that he was living shit. The Dogma monster, it like literally looks like shit.
And yeah, they call it the shit demon as well.
Like this, and this one is like, he just is supposed to sort of evoke being living shit a little bit more. It's more of a cartoonish rubbery costume thing, but it's gross.
Yeah.
It's no good, and it still has the buzz cut.
So that you know it's Phil Paxton.
But like, yeah, shit. This movie just kind of utterly fails in every way. And not to diminish Kelly LeBrock in the movie again, she is gorgeous, but this movie, she can't carry it by herself. It's just so, doesn't hold up.
So if I may, Carl, I watched this movie last night, and right after doing so, I went into a Discord call with all of my friends, and my camera was on, and they all made the comment that I looked depressed. Like, this movie legitimately took the life out of me.
Yeah.
It was really hard to watch, and I would be lying if I said that there were certain parts where I was like, I don't need to watch this, and kind of just skipped ahead.
Yeah, it gets more towards really the end. Cringy at times. I think I may have done a little 10-second skip ahead
I can tell you the broad strokes that you missed in the thing too is like Robert Downey Jr. and other kid who will never be heard from again, they wind up befriending Gary and Wyatt just because they want a girl as hot as Kelly LeBrock, and so she winds up they go through the process but forget to put a Barbie doll in between the battery cords which created the woman, and so instead it hit a Time magazine that had a picture of a missile, and so it became a giant missile.
A bunch of missiles start coming up out of the ground,
so
poking through the floor.
The real problem I actually have with that is that not only did they didn't even befriend them, they literally were like, hey, we will legitimately just give you our girlfriends if you make us woman as hot
it's
as
very
Lisa.
Transactional.
It's terrible.
And the boys just go for it.
Yeah, like, no, it was literally trading women. Like, isn't work. That severely
okay, let me tell you about John Hughes here. So had his first feature film before Weird Science was 16 Candles, also with Anthony Michael Hall. And there is a scene in it where this really popular guy is dating this popular girl. And like, it codes for like, fuck this girl. But when you watch it, she really does nothing wrong in the entire thing.
Yeah.
And she gets super drunk and passes out. And like, the jock like basically cheats on her and then tells Anthony Michael Hall, yeah, go ahead and take her home. Like, kind of do what you want with her. Like, throws her the keys to his Porsche. And then like, they wake up and realize that they had slept together and it's totally fine. He's like, did you like it? She's like, I think I did. And like, this is John Hughes right here.
Oh man.
That is, by the way, a movie with boobs, like an extended boob showering scene that is rated PG, if you were curious.
Gotta love the 80s. Oh man.
That's good to know if you're a horny teenager or a horny adult in a halfway house.
Oh man.
When I was in the pre-release center for 10 months, the most popular movie to check out was Titanic because you couldn't get rated R movies in there, and it's a PG-13 movie with tits. So
file Doc Hollywood under that.
And they wonder why criminals commit crimes again.
Yeah, right. Because
they can get porn with PG-13.
No, because while they're under supervision, they're not even allowed to fucking jerk off in peace without the fucking man coming down on their neck being like, better do this to Buffy the Vampire Slayer and regular porn.
Yes, the true plague in our justice system.
Thanks a lot, Joss
sexual
Whedon.
Frustration.
Thanks a lot, Joss Whedon. You made legal porn.
Goddamn monster. All right, well, let's talk about the Stepford Wives. That's 22 minutes. Oh,
okay, so now let's rewind the movie clock back like 30 years, right?
1975. Closer to 40.
So we're going back
closer
40
to
years
50.
From the present. But this is like, and then this is like, what, 15, 20 years earlier than the other movie?
It's like 12 years earlier,
12?
I think.
Okay, so 75.
Is Weird Science 87?
87.
Is that right?
Okay, that sounds about right. Even just camera work moved light years from 1975 to 1987.
Yeah.
This guy basically decides he wants to move his family to the suburbs from the big city. Like, I think you can assume it's, New York.
They do say New York, and they move to Stepford, Connecticut.
His wife immediately feels very out of place. She's dabbled in the women's lib movement a little bit. She's dressed very 70s at a time where women are intentionally not wearing bras, for example, kind of looking at that as a tool of the patriarchy and things like that, just giving context here. And so she immediately makes a friend with somebody because everybody in the town is like fucking weird. Like, all the women that she sees are very much like, going to do housework. Like, this makes my husband happy, but in an extremely weird way. So she makes this other friend, and they decide at a certain point that the women are so weird in this town, they're going to start this women's lib group. And so they start trying to bring people in, and they're having zero success. And then this guy wants her to record all of these phrases that he has down saying it's going to be the future of something. And so she says, well, I'll do it if you can get this woman, and this woman in. And so he agrees. At the same time, her husband has this meeting, and it's like a men's only group. And that kind of starts a fight because we find out that, like, also she didn't want to really move to Connecticut. He just up and moved them without talking to her until after he bought the deed. And so she's talking about how he does things without her consent all the time. She starts this women's lib group. The women you see close up are extra weird. They're constantly just so focused on their husbands, making their husbands happy. And one of the women they try to recruit, they like kind of just, her friend is very pushy and like walks into the house, and they hear her having sex with her husband, calling him the best, the greatest, all this stuff. And then you see him later and the dude is a chud. He just looks awful. And you're like, what? Like, I think that's kind of what they're going for in that, right? And so basically you fast forward to her friend suddenly goes off on vacation. And when she comes back, she's like everybody else is. And so she's really, really worried about it and doesn't understand what's going on. Her husband is basically telling her, you're hysterical. I don't think he says those words, but it's akin to it. She goes to a psychiatrist, but she refuses to do it in town. And so she goes to one and basically says they're doing something to the women. I don't know what they're doing, but they're coming out differently. They're going to do something to me. And she goes to take her kids and they're gone. Her husband, meanwhile, has been like doing weird stuff, like saying, I love you. One of the meetings they're in, like, people were sketching her and stuff. There's all this strange stuff that goes on. She finally winds up going to this house, and it turns out that they're making robots of the women and having them serve the husband. And like, you find out there's this like robot of her that has these giant breasts and like those very black eyes. And we can assume that the robot kills her. And then at the very end, you just see all the women in the grocery stores being like, hi, Jane. Hi. And they're just like walking by getting shopping carts.
With, like, for perfect everybody. Hair, perfect makeup. Yep. They like same flower dress and hat, like just high fashion colors. Sort of.
Literally look. Like cookie cutter, like each of them out.
Like, they're all acting like they're from a 50s sitcom, right? Like yeah. A woman it, you would see.
Like totally like a Donna Reed.
Yeah, not Lucy. Not well, Lucy. No, like, yeah. Like all of
not
the
even
ones.
Sitcom. Like even like just complete 1950s housewife. Like to a T, like any sort of commercialism, any sort of sitcom, any sort of representation of the 1950s woman is exactly what they were. Like the husband comes first to them. I will not try to hide it. This out of the two of them, this was definitely my favorite one to watch.
Oh, it was a much better film.
It was. I'm a 22-year-old white male from Helena, Montana, and this movie terrified me just from like growing up in the time that I did and having all these different groups like trying to be recognized, and women and feminism was one of them. So like watching this movie, being an ally to the feminist movement as much as I can, like this movie just blew me out of the water, creeped me the hell out. It took a very dangerous stance, I believe, for the 70s. I mean, it's like you said, with the women's lib movement.
Well, just a little context. When this movie was made, a woman could not get a credit card in her name. I mean, that's kind of where we're at, because I don't think women could get a credit card till early 80s.
Couldn't get birth control without a note from their husband.
Yeah.
Sometimes they still can't. To be perfectly honest, I read subreddit posts from women where they talk about how their husbands can go in and schedule vasectomies and have no consultation with their wives. But when they want to go in and get their tubes tied, the doctors want their husband to be there. And they're like, why aren't you including him in this discussion and this and that? So it's like that stuff still exists, right?
Oh, yeah.
No, I'm not saying it's not. Right. Yeah. But I think we're trying to contextualize exactly where we're at. Because what you're also talking about tends to be in the Bible Belt, correct?
So I'm going to get a little personal here. When my youngest daughter was born, my wife was 24-ish, and she couldn't get her tubes tied after our second child because she wasn't 25 years of age.
What the fuck, dude? What does that matter?
And even though she's like, I will never have any more kids. I don't want any more kids. We have two perfectly healthy children. You know, we're good here. And the doctor wouldn't do it.
But what if you change your mind?
Yeah.
Yeah. And so she had to go in and get it done years later during a different procedure, and actually ended up doing some other things. So like, instead of doing it when you're supposed to, definitely not something that was years ago, or I mean, this was 4 years ago?
Yeah.
Jesus.
Back on track with the movie itself, the idea of men controlling a suburban neighborhood, I mean, it's not out of the realm of possibility, especially with how wealthy those men were. We all know the power that money holds. So I think the thing that terrified me the most, other than the fact that they were just making these perfect carbon copies of the women to market back to the men as their wives, was just the fact of how close to the realm of possibility that this movie could have been. Men can take over. Or like a group of people can take over such a small area. The movie bothered me in a way that I feel people need to be bothered.
You know what? I just made a connection here. I think you're right about shooting Walt Disney, because wasn't the main bad guy, didn't he work at Disney World on the animatronic stuff? This movie's got kind of a footprint. It lives on because it's got a remake. Jordan Peele has cited it for Get Out and for Us. Like both of those movies, he incorporated what he thought were elements of the Stepford Wives into those movies. I think the difference between these movies kind of comes down to the writing in a way. And I talked about the stuff John Hughes wrote. So like some of the stuff that the guy who did the Stepford Wives, who's Bill Goldman, he did The Princess Bride. He did Maverick.
Bill Goldman adapted the screenplay. Ives did the book.
Right, but he wrote the screenplay. That's what I'm trying to get at. Goldman is kind of the gold standard for screenplays, typically. I think his only real fail, and it's a real bad one. What was the worst Stephen King movie?
The Langoliers?
Dreamcatcher.
Mm-hmm. No, Langoliers is way worse.
Well, Langoliers is a TV movie.
Yeah, it's a TV. Yeah.
So quality is low anyways. First, it's got that one dude from True Romance that spills the coke all over himself when he gets pulled over. That's funny. Christian Slater pulls a gun on him in an elevator and he begs for his life.
Yeah, and Dreamcatcher has Jason Lee. It should not have been so terrible because it's written by a good author, Stephen King. It was adapted by a good screenwriter. Maximum Overdrive is worse. Oh, dude. Yeah. But... I almost think Dreamcatcher is worse.
It's like just Lawrence Kasdan
directed it. It's not just disappointing. It's like unpleasant.
Yeah,
like at every level.
It's viscerally tough to watch. Like just because it's gross.
We were talking about shit demons.
Yeah,
there are shit weasels in this movie.
Oh god.
Oh, and you know the Rick and Morty where they shit eggs.
Unfortunately, yes.
That is a reference to Dreamcatcher.
Oh.
Yeah, it is an awful movie. And it was one of those things, like, I've heard Bill Goldman talk about it. It was the last screenplay that he wrote. He doctored many, many great films. Like, went in and just helped them. Like, Good Will Hunting, for example. Like, people like to say that Bill Goldman wrote it. It's not true. Like, I've heard him on a podcast say it's not true. But they had this three-act structure where, like, you have the guy who sees the thing on the chalkboard, and it turns out he's a math genius. And then he talks to a psychiatrist, gets his shit together. The second act, he starts working for the CIA. And then the third act, he saves the world. And Bill Goldman's like, no, the second and third act are bullshit. Take your first act and break it down, and that's your movie. Like Silence of the Lambs, he like helped them structure the scene where Clarice is walking in to see Hannibal.
Okay, this is all very interesting, but let's talk about the Stepford Wives.
I am talking about the Stepford Wives.
You're talking about Bill Goldman writing
Silence. Yeah, but I'm trying to say it's a matter of the writers. Right. Like, look at John Hughes's thing. It's all reductive to gender or like race. John Hughes is just like, he is your typical unthinking, uncaring male boomer in a way. Like Molly Ringwald was his muse, but at the same time, you look at the roles he puts Molly Ringwald in. I'd love John Hughes movies growing up too, but you look back at them and it's just like, they're awful. They're really awful in like the things that they push forward. I mean, like Breakfast Club is maybe his best movie, and that one even doesn't play as well and has a straight up sexual assault where like Judd Nelson's character is just like biting her crotch for laughs when it's clearly unwanted in the cafeteria. You know, it's like he's just kind of an awful person. And I think Bill Goldman's writing is a lot more thoughtful, and he's really good at putting his head into the place of other characters. So that's all I have to say about the writing.
So the Stepford Wives, one thing that I thought was crazy was the fact that they decided to go with robot replacements for the wives, because they kind of were hinting at brainwashing. She thought there's something in the water. And the way that people go into like repeating key phrases over and over, the women, there's like one woman gets in a car accident, just a minor fender bender, but then she keeps like repeating herself. And then she's wandering through a party later, just like repeating herself again. I guess that that could be construed as like a malfunctioning robot. But for me, it felt like programmed with brainwashing, and that was like cracking. And I was expecting her there to be a scene of her like briefly waking up and then the men like ushering her off to like replace her programming. Yeah. And so then when it turns out that she's a robot at the end, that got me thinking, like, the thing that's really crazy about them being robot is that at the end of it, they just kill the women and then just live with a robot, which you could build a robot without killing a woman.
Dude, like, why are you,
it's like destroying a woman's life just for the sheer cruelty of it is part of it for these guys.
Yep. Yeah.
And like, it's fucked up,
and
man.
It gets worse when you realize they drop hints that the kids are super well-behaved in that town.
Like, they're doing
well.
It to their kids
they're
as well.
They're doing it to their kids
and
as
so
well.
So that got me thinking of if there was a sequel to this movie that took place
there
like...
There is. I don't know anything about it, but...
30 yeah. years in the future. The town would be a bunch of old men...
With these hot young
sitting
wives.
Sitting alone in their in this respective houses just in a chair while their robot wives took care of their robot kids on autopilot around them. And it would just be like, what is the point of this existence?
Yeah, it is pretty nuts.
It's
because
so bizarre.
All they have to do is sneakily get all that stuff done like they did before and then just divorce them. They'll clearly not want to stay in the town, right? Because like it's such a
weird
town.
Right, and let them go live their lives. But instead, yeah. they ritualistically have the robot duplicate murder the original woman. And I even thought that like they always had like they get the eyes right because and the robot version of hers eyes were black because the final step was to murder the woman and then put her eyes in the robot's head so that the eyes were right, because that's one thing they always say is like you can always tell because of the eyes. So if you take the actual eyes from the living girl,
man, I didn't even think about that. That's so fucked up. But I think you're right.
Then
because they're commenting on it with the sketches.
At least
right?
then. The husband can look into his robot wife's eyes and see the eyes he married
so
inside
up.
The
yeah,
robot
yeah,
body. So and I mean, this is 1975. They ain't making good robots.
No, like, think Chuck E. Cheese
these
robots.
Things are like,
dude.
Yeah. These are
Pirates
like, yeah,
of the
these
Caribbean.
Are mannequins at best. And there's even a weird, like, there's a definitely foreshadowing moment at the beginning when just
in New
as
York,
they're leaving
when he's
town,
walking out with the
there's
robot.
A, some guy walking with a mannequin and she stops and takes photos of him because she's a photographer. One of the ways he kind of convinces her the move
like
will
the,
be okay is that there's room for a dark room in the big house.
I like the little kid says, Daddy, there was a man carrying a naked woman down the street.
That's why we're leaving.
Yeah, and he's like, that's those why kids, we're moving to Stepford.
Those kids are awful. I mean, they're like little, what is that? Children of the Damned? Like,
Children of the Corn?
Children of the Damned.
Village of the Damned.
Just damned children. Creepy little.
Damned children?
Creepy, like, man,
damned
70s kids
the
have these weird haircuts. Like, their haircuts are super weird and straight. Like, all the kids from the 70s, like, all those kids from the TV shows.
With their fucking three stripes.
What's the one? What's the one with the kid band?
Kids Incorporated?
Partridge Family?
Partridge Family. All those kids are little demon children. And these kids in this movie, I mean, they're little literally children as well.
Danny Bonaducci.
They're like creepy in their own right, just in the fact that they are barely human looking.
Don't worry about it.
They barely have any identity whatsoever. Don't worry about it.
They'll be replaced and have their eyeballs scooped out.
Yeah, no shit. And replaced with buttons or something, like in Coraline.
Oh, God.
Dick, this is a movie that, like, I had never seen this before, but I knew every beat of the story because it has been
copied
endlessly. There's, like, every mystery TV show that exists has one episode that is a straight borrowing of this storyline.
Yeah.
Every single, like, Fringe has got a Stepford Wives episode, I'm guessing. X-Files has a Stepford Wives episode, I'm sure.
And like I said, like, it's just, it's so influential. It goes everywhere. But I find it interesting that, like, the only person I knew before today who had seen the original one is either, they're all either 55 or older, or it's Amanda, because she was watching the last half hour and I sat down and watched it with her and I was like, this is really fucking good. That's why I was immediately like, yes. But I don't know anybody younger who's seen it. And I think the Nicole Kidman one kind of just supplanted it. And I haven't seen that one. But I mean, like, I think most people saw the remake and, you know, haven't gone back to the original, but it's really good.
So I've never even heard the name Stepford Wives until you mentioned it to me for this episode. So, like, I was going into this completely fresh. I had no idea.
For sure. It used to be a more of a well-known cultural thing. It still is like a definitive thing. The idea of, you know, replacing people is very much a Stepford Wives situation at this point.
I mean, on TV movies, a woman who's very proper and very that 50s housewife are often referred to as a Stepford wife in popular culture.
Yeah. Like, I knew what this was long before I saw the movie.
Yeah.
So, like, it's hard. Like, you say the brainwashing thing. I think you're spot on. I didn't see it. I knew before I ever watched it generally what it was, but I was really blown away that, like, it was this feminist thing because I hadn't really thought that there was a point behind it or a message. I just thought of it as, like, a horror movie.
Really? Because it's directed by a white guy based on a book that's written by a white guy.
I know.
So it's gotta be metaphor, right? Like, I honestly went and checked his Wikipedia to see if he was like a closeted gay man, because I was like, this would be a really good
Bill Goldman or director?
The writer of the novel.
Oh, gotcha.
Ira Levin is his name. And I was like, I bet you he was a closeted gay man, and this is like a metaphor of him being trapped. Because,
hold on, hold on. Let's not go away from that movie. What did you discover? Because you said
he was married twice. He has four grandchildren. Regular.
Was he a feminist or?
It doesn't really. Because his Wikipedia is pretty sparse.
And I don't know.
He's more well known for writing a different book that also got adapted that might actually be more famous.
While you're looking in that, I don't know where the feminist thread comes from. Like, it could have come from the screenplay.
Rosemary's Baby.
Oh, yeah.
He wrote Rosemary's Baby.
Okay, well, I'm telling you right now, he's feminist, because Rosemary's Baby is absolutely a feminist movie. Like, that movie is about people making decisions for the woman around them with, like, giving birth. And it's clearly an allegory for abortion at a time where I think that's pre-Roe versus Wade.
Yeah, because it was 67
was the movie, 67? I think.
Yeah. Which, because Roe v. Wade was 72.
Yeah, so I'm saying straight up, that dude's feminist. Like, I'm sure of it.
He also wrote The Boys from Brazil.
No shit. Was that the one with, like, Hitler hiding out in Brazil?
They're making Hitler clones. Yeah. Nazi scientists that have escaped to Brazil are making clones of Hitler.
That's right. I gotta watch that movie at some point.
Good. That's a good concept, too, actually. This guy's good at, like, coming up with the concept.
Is something that, like, keeps popping up in sci-fi is the Hitler clone.
Here's the thing about the movie that really stuck with me, though. At the very end, the movie literally freezes on her eyes as she's walking down the hallway, right? Mm-hmm. If you look at her face, she looks miserable. So why would they make the robot miserable? They wouldn't. This is what I think really happened at the end of the movie. I think she killed the robot.
Oh, and she's pretending?
And she is a survivor, which she has mentioned. They talk about this. Like, you're a survivor.
But how would she have the extra big boobs?
I don't know. I mean, I just think that, does she have the extra big boobs in the final yes. sequence where she's walking? Like, she could just pad them or something. Like, it just seemed like she was pretending to be the robot version of herself in order to not be killed, and she was trapped in that life.
It's because possible.
She would be killed if she tried to run again or something, and she just, like, was stuck in that life pretending to be that thing. And that would just be another level, another layer of it all. Because I guess they did, like, I didn't actually notice that they had augmented her body at the same time. I wondered why they like focused the camera on her barely covered, like you can see through the fabric.
They very intentionally have the character not wearing a bra, and you can see that she's not super big most of the movie. And I have to think, after seeing the end of it, that was intentional to be like, look, they're making it into the image of what the husband wants, right?
Yeah.
I was thinking about her boobs in that scene because they pointed the camera right at him. But then I was more thinking about her black eyes when the camera panned up to her face and her eyes were black. And then I was like, that became the most captivating thing on the screen.
Mm-hmm.
So then I was thinking about that. And that's when I came up with the eyes. Eye theft.
When you say at the end of the movie she looks miserable, is it just like her general facial expression, or are you specifically like referencing her eyes?
Her whole face looks haunted. This shot ends just completely on her. Her eyes are taking up the entire camera.
The main character, she goes over to her basically new best friend's house that they're planning to like both escape from after she got back from her weekend getaway, quotes.
Yeah.
And she's definitely been replaced by a robot.
Yeah, it's so odd.
And she cuts her own hand, and like the robot wife just keeps on doing, she's making coffee, and then like she's so freaked out, she stabs the robot best friend, and then like the robot glitches, and just watching it glitch, like she just goes, grabs a cup and just drops it on the floor and goes back and grabs another cup.
No. And then like she goes to pour coffee into
the filter. Does like three different things, but it's like you could definitely tell like it's a computer program that's fucked up.
So that was the end of the movie. When she went back the first time after the weekend getaway, she was just knew that something had happened, and she was like, I need to get out of this house now. Like, nope, I'm not going to stay. I can't. I'm sorry. And then just bounced. That scene that you're talking about, that was, first of all, cementing the plot of the movie. It's just like, nope, they are being replaced. The copy didn't bleed. The copy didn't do anything besides glitch. So that was like the cementing of the movie being about replacing women. That scene in general is just, it's powerful because like she's sopping wet. She's hysteric. She's just like, I need a friend, and her friend is dead. I'm still alive. Like, please, I need you to be alive. And then when she's not, she's just like, I'm alone. I have to do this alone.
Carl, to double back on the thing you're saying about maybe how she's pretending to be in the grocery store. So I don't know what the intention in the film was, but I was just reading down the breakdown of the novel. And apparently it ends with her replaced by a robot in a grocery store. And then you see the new woman in town who will be the next one to be replaced. So
right. Like it's a cycle.
Well, they kind of showed that with the black couple in the grocery store, because she was dressed a lot like the main character was when she first came to Stepford.
That just floated by me, so I didn't catch it.
Yeah, so like there was a scene where they're talking to the old lady in the town, and she kind of drops the soft N-word. the really old racist lady.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But we used to have a women's lib group in this town. And
yeah, that's right.
But then at the very end, when they're panning through the grocery store, there's this one black couple, and she's definitely dressed in the modern woman. She's talking to her boyfriend, and they're kind of in having like an argument.
So yeah, she was saying pretty much the same thing that the main character was saying. Like, this town is creepy. I don't want to be here. And the husband is doing the same exact thing that all the husbands did. It's like, you're being hysteric. Like, it's going to take time. It's a change. You're just in your head. Just calm down.
Isn't that nice that the men's group is progressive enough to let a black man in? But, you know, that actually does – that reflects history because black men got a vote before women did, so.
Yep, and we got a black president like, still haven't
gotten a woman president. As racist as a country as we are, we're still slightly more misogynist than we are racist.
Unfortunately.
That is accurate.
Yeah, no, like, unfortunately.
Well, this country sometimes, seriously.
Right.
Most of the time.
90%.
But wait, like, let's pass a bill to make it against the law not to play the fucking national anthem at a football game.
That's... Yeah.
You know, I feel like we're glossing over the real issue, which is like Mr. Potato Head.
Dr. Seuss.
Oh, my God. No, we were actually just talking about that. So after I got done watching Weird Science and went to my Discord call, my friends and I actually talked about that. Like, I was saying, like, this movie – like, I was talking about Weird Science, and I was just like, it was just so grossly misogynistic. And to think that we have barely made it past anything that movie stood against is astounding.
Yeah.
Because that movie is almost 40 years old, and, like, feminism is still fighting this increasingly uphill battle to be like seen as human beings in the eyes of our government, and it's ridiculous.
You know what's crazy about this, thinking about it, is like the movie that I picked is I think it's fair to say it's pretty feminist, and then like your movie was 12 years later. It's complete looked at as like very spectrum. Misogynistic, but only in some circles, right? Like, we haven't really come very far. In fact, we might have regressed from where we were.
There are women that watch this movie and go, haha, boys will be boys.
Yeah, I mean, it's guilty. Like, misogyny takes all forms. Yeah. It really does. Let me, as a white man, tell you women how to think about feminism.
Let me mansplain this to you.
Dude, me and my friend were talking about how you could get a business degree with like a minor in women's studies as a white man, and somehow in a business field you would be hired on as like the woman's relations officer or like the head of women's relations. And I just want to be there the day that a white man mansplains to a woman in an office setting how to be a woman and just have the woman explode. Like that, I think that is the
literally
day.
Literally head explode.
Yeah, no, I really think that is the day that we are just like, oh no, we men are now obsolete. Like, we're done now. The idea of that is just bizarre to me, while also simultaneously being one of the funniest jokes I've ever come up with in my head.
Yeah, Lisa is a genie from a genie lamp. Even Wyatt and Gary couldn't give half of their stolen bread to the orphan children. You know, one scene is all it takes. There's one scene in Aladdin, and it redeems him for the entire goddamn movie.
They don't need it. They have Chad to redeem
one scene. Yeah. And then this is the other thing about Lisa. She's also a prototype Mr. Meeseeks because she just grants your wish and then she fucks off.
So like,
just gone. She goes and makes an entire high school gymnastics class smack their heads and fall on the ground simultaneously.
The other thing to think about is like the other message of Weird Science is the fact that women are here to fix men somehow. Like, you have to think, like, the entire reason that Lisa existed was to literally fix Gary and Wyatt was his name.
Yeah.
Oh, no. She was there to have sex with, but she wound up fixing them so that they could have sex with the girls they originally wanted to have sex with.
Like,
it's more complicated than
she
that.
She would have had sex with them if they had been able to go through with it.
Yeah.
But they were, like, just awful.
That was way before gay in a three-way.
They were
not gay in a three-way.
Well, and I even, you know, what's sad about this, what's really sad is that I have clearly learned very little in my life because I want to refer to them as little bitches, which is an inherently misogynistic term in and of itself.
Yeah.
I want to call them pussies. That's the kind of thing, that's what they would have called them in those days.
That was the 80s, man.
And, I mean, that's what they still, honestly, that's what they would still call
it. Oh, pussy is still used.
Yeah, unfortunately.
And it's like,
pussy was like kind of popularized by, I want to say Fast Times at Ridgemont High, because you literally have a character go, yeah, pussy, it's part wuss and part put, like he like puts it together.
He makes it not have anything to do with.
No, he basically just explains, or maybe it's wussy. He explains the term wussy, maybe? No, is it pussy? You've seen Fast Times.
You know how long it's been since I've seen Fast Times.
Yeah, I don't
think
we should go back to that one either, to be honest.
It's less misogynistic than Weird Science,
I
but but not much.
And also, instead of
it is the polished turd.
Instead of getting nobody and Anthony Michael Hall, we get one guy that is a fusing of those two into an even worse person, and that's fucking Judge Reinhold.
No, dude, he becomes manager of
Judge
Maximar.
Reinhold's the fucking worst, and don't even give me.
No,
started.
No, he's no. No.
Fuck Judge Reinhold.
He's bad, but...
He's not that bad in that movie. Like, he gets
Latino
exactly...
The guy is really bad.
Yeah, oh, showing your true colors there, Brandon.
Damn.
It's because he's
I can't
only...
remember his
first
name.
Alex forgets the black guy and or black people in Stepford Wives, forgets they even exist. Then Brandon's saying the Latino guy's the worst.
He is the only featured character actor who did not go on to become a big name.
Meanwhile, like I'm superior because I don't see Italian when I hear the name Vinny.
But you know... But, you know, it's – I think to the – and Fast Times at Ridgemont High, and I can't remember the character name, and but I think that – I mean, that actor, he played an asshole to, like, a perfect degree.
Yeah.
I think that was to
it
his own
detriment.
Probably
hurt his career, yeah.
Yeah.
He also showed his peen in the movie, and that they had to cut it out to get a R rating for that movie. But, yeah, I mean, you're talking about a movie that, like, broke out Phoebe Cates.
Judge Reinhold.
Judge Reinhold.
Jennifer Jason Leigh.
I love her
so much.
Sean Penn.
Yep.
Spicoli.
Yep, that was Sean Penn's first movie. There's a really big one.
Ben Stein.
We should get the Judgment here because we're running a little long.
Oops.
Judgment. The Judgment is for Stepford Wives.
Yeah.
It is a movie with substance. And Weird Science is like...
It is how did you put it? Dissatisfactory minus or something?
Oh, unsatisfactory. It's like, I don't think that's what it is. But it's up to you.
Expired candy corn. Candy that was never good for you to begin with, but this somehow has become worse than
and
that.
You ate too much of it. You're really realizing
it was always bad. Pure unhealthy, non-empty calories, but now it actively poisons you as well.
And it's stale.
No, dude, it's absolutely just like the Halloween candy bucket as a whole. You start out really good and you're like, oh man, this stuff's really good, but then like a couple months later you go back to it and all you have are like those little shitty pumpkin candies and you're like, oh man, this is just fucking terrible now.
That's the worst.
Let's go to grades here. I'm going to give Weird Science a needs improvement plus, and here's why. There are scenes that genuinely make me laugh in it. I can't help it, but it is really bad for you, for sure. But like the whole motorcycle gang thing makes me laugh when you got the guy from The Hills Have Eyes and Anthony Michael Hall tells him off and he goes walking out and he's like, could you not tell anybody about this? I'm a teacher. Like, I love that stuff. Like,
That the old like guy that sounds like Billy Idol and makes me think about Billy Idol for some reason.
Kelly LeBrock is throwing a million miles an hour.
She's
in this
crushing
movie.
It.
She's really
good. She crushes it.
So I can't go down lower than that because it's still a fun movie. It's just like terrible for you if you think about it at all or like show it to anybody.
If you show this to somebody, you're going to be sitting next to them just embarrassed that you made them waste their time.
Unless they're like in their 40s, then they'll be like, oh, I love that movie.
Honestly, you should just watch this movie in YouTube clips of just Kelly LeBrock. Just like 1 6-minute video of all her best scenes, and then you can say you've watched the whole movie.
By the way, do you know her next most famous movie she was in?
Nope.
It's a Gene Wilder movie, The Woman in Red. Okay, so she's The Woman in Red, and like it is just as reductive as Weird Science. But the difference is Gene Wilder, like, he throws away his entire life trying to get this girl. And then at the very end, it turns out that she has a boyfriend. And so right as he's about to have sex with her, he has to sneak out the window. And then he's, like, hanging there naked. And then, like, the entire town sees him. So, like, he gets his just desserts. So it's, like, at least, like, they have that. But it's also – she was definitely, like, the sex object in a lot of movies at that point. How do you rate Weird Science?
I'm going to go with you. I'm going to say needs improvement plus. And basically the same reasons you gave. I actually didn't rewatch this one. I'm just going back from memory.
You son of a bitch.
I had to sit through this hunk of crap for this, and you just were like, oh yeah, no, I'm just going to pull it out of my ass.
No, I mean, I've seen it several times.
Oh yeah.
And I mean, I actually watched, because it actually spawned a TV series.
Yeah.
then on USA. I watched the entire thing.
I remember the series. The TV series, too.
Okay, it is not better in quality, but it's definitely less misogynistic than the show. Like, Lisa is actually like their friend and helping them with things and not just somebody to be leered at, although they certainly wanted you to leer at her.
She's also like a straight Barbie analog where she's got long blonde hair and looks like
it's Vanessa
Barbie.
Angel.
The girl in the TV show is a blonde. I watched that show.
It's the lady from Kingpin.
I just remember a blonde lady that looks like a Barbie, and they use Brandon? A Barbie.
Yeah, I think it's the lady from Kingpin.
Yeah, Vanessa
Angel.
But it
was like a dirty blonde, yeah.
She's blonde.
Okay.
I'll fight you.
What do you give this, Carl?
This basically, yeah, needs improvement plus. My pluses are for Kelly LeBrock and for Weird Science again, which they really leaned heavy on the theme song throughout the movie. I think it plays at least four times.
Almost and every time something magical happens.
That fucking song holds up. It's good. Danny Elfman is the shit.
I'll stand by the song. I've had it stuck in my head since I watched it.
The song, it's not even like in my top 10 of my favorite Oingo Boingo songs, but it's still super good. Like, my list of the best Oingo Boingo songs is like 100 songs. So
top song real quick.
Eat shit.
That's blonde. The light
that
is shining
not
on her.
Blonde, dude.
Yeah. Maybe she's blonde in the one episode I watched.
Vanessa Angel. She's got like reddish brunette hair.
Yeah. She's a genie. She can change the way that she looks.
It's definitely redhead.
Kelly LeBrock had like four different hairstyles in the movie alone. I guarantee you that at some point in the multiple episodes of a TV show, she was a blonde. Is that a scene from Weird Science, the show, or is that a scene from a different show?
It's just a scene from Pinterest.
Pinterest.
Oh, yes.
Yeah,
That's a reliable source to me, man.
Now I'm going to watch the entire – I'm going to go find the Weird Science TV show and watch it, and I'm going to take a picture.
Carl's
going to
get so depressed, dude. Just like, why did I get in this rabbit hole? No, Vanessa Angel's pretty hot. You'll have a fun time.
Dude, I watch garbage every day.
How do you
rate? I just watched 9 seasons of How I Met Your Mother.
Oh, God.
Again.
Yeah, he was on the repeat view. What do you rate Weird Science?
I am going to say unsatisfactory, just flat unsatisfactory.
Yeah, that tracks.
Yeah.
We all had nostalgia propping it up for us.
Yeah. That's
also
the thing, dude.
I'd be lying if I said I hadn't tossed off to Kelly LeBrock when I was a kid.
No, like, the movie itself really just made me uncomfortable. I literally just felt bad watching it. Why would anyone remember this movie? And, like, as you guys have exacerbated about, definitely the women. And like you said, nostalgia, you grew up with it. I'm going into this completely fresh. Like, I even went up to my dad and I was like, oh yeah, no, I just watched Weird Science. And he even was just like, oh man, that movie was fantastic. I was like, it really was not.
Dude,
I'm sorry.
I have to tell you, men of our age, if we have not watched it recently, are going to universally love that movie. It was always on cable.
Yep.
We were like young when it came on. It hadn't really occurred to us. She was
and
like a
Kelly
first
LeBrock
crush.
Was hot.
Yeah, that can't happen.
Like,
so,
and it was, I mean, she was definitely like one of my go-tos.
To toss
man.
Off to?
Yeah. Like,
To counter the theme song argument, how the hell can that stand up to Ghostbusters at all?
Oh, it's like 1,000 times. This is another thing. Weird Science, the song, was a song first.
Yeah.
Just a song that was so good that they were like, let's write an entire movie to go along with this song.
I would counter it with Ghostbusters was also a song first by Huey Lewis in the News, and then Ray Parker Jr. kind
just
of ripped it off.
Just changed some of the words?
He changed all the words.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Did he change all of them?
Yeah, all of them. There was no Ghostbusters in the original song.
There's no who in the original song? You? No, they didn't say you? They didn't say gonna? They didn't say call?
I'm trying to remember what song it was that he ripped off.
When there's something strange in the neighborhood.
He doesn't
the.
Say when. No, he says there's something strange
in
the neighborhood.
Neighborhood.
But there's
in,
no when.
Those are
there's
all
no
very
when.
Common words that are probably in the other
I'm
song.
I'm pretty sure Invisible Man
I
is
demand,
not in the other song.
Demand that you look up the lyrics to the original.
Does anybody remember what it is?
No.
When there's something.
Oh, it's I want a new drug. I want a new drug. Do,
do. I want a new duck. That's a Weird Al song.
Do, do, do. Well, yeah, he also. But Weird Al did it through the proper channels. All right, I'm going to give the Stepford Wives an excellent minus. I really liked it. I think it has aged in certain ways, but I think it's totally watchable. And it's brain candy. So if you like something to think about, I think it's pretty good.
I'm going to give it a satisfactory plus. I don't mind something. Thing that drags on a little bit, but definitely 70s paced where they just really drag on a lot of stuff. And I'm like, I mean, there was a lot of times I was like scrolling through my phone.
Yeah.
I mean, I, of course, was sick with COVID.
I like.
Like, it the, just, yeah.
The you want to tell him what I said Brandon would say?
That it droned on too long?
Yeah. Yeah. It was too slow.
No, like literally verbatim for work today. That's he's like, yeah, no, 70s, I'm going to tell you right now, Brandon's going to think the Stepford Wives was slow as hell.
I mean, you're not wrong. It's slow in times.
However,
that's how they did shit in the 70s.
I mean, there was some really great substance. Like, I don't want to diminish the substance that is there.
Yeah, and you liked it quite a bit more than I thought. I just thought it was funny because I was like, I don't know if Brandon's going to like it because it's slow.
Here's a big thing about movies from that era. It's all shot on film. And editing film is way more labor-intensive than editing fucking digitally.
Oh, yeah.
So post-production is not the same thing that it was back then. It's just purely on a mechanical level. So that is a factor that cannot be ignored.
My thing with
everything in the 70s is longer
with
like
the
that.
Quote unquote slow scenes is I will concede I could think of like a one or two parts that really went on for too long. But in reality, even those built onto the suspense of the movie just a tad bit more. Really
there were scenes like where the main character is sitting in like the grass field out back. She's got the umbrella and then like they have a conversation and that's fine. But then they like have them walk all the way to the house through the field like and it doesn't add anything to the story.
Yeah, that's a common thing. Like back then you'll see them pick up the phone, dial the number, wait for the person to pick up. The person picks up. They have the conversation. She says goodbye. She hangs up the phone. Now it's just like you see them pick up the phone and the conversation kind of starts.
Or
and,
it just like, clips to like her talking on the
right,
phone.
You are right. But I will say that one scene, like that's a cinematography move right there. They're in a beautiful wheat field and they're showing that beautiful wheat field.
No, I mean, it's like, it does look great on screen, yeah. But it doesn't add anything. And it just it's something that like 2020 like attention span.
Yeah.
I will say this. You don't think that there's an intentionality that they're trying to show this like false, beautiful thing of the whole town, right? Like they spend a lot of time driving along New York and showing the cityscape and showing what it looks like and then showing what, you know, Stepford looks like. And they spend a lot of time showing you the geography of the town, how like things are not close together and you have to drive. Like they're showing like idyllic settings because it's like these husbands are trying to go to this place where they can get their idealized life, right?
Do they need to do that in every scene or do they need to do that once or twice?
But I like it.
And it's also a matter of like, okay, so the opening sequence is her in her apartment that she's moving out of, spending one last minute and all the furniture is gone. It's all packed up. It's empty. And it shows her in different rooms. And it's a dynamic scene because even though she is still, the camera is either slowly panning in or, you know, just like studying her. And the scene where that Brandon was describing in the field, it's more of a static shot and the meat of the scene is in the conversation itself. And do you need them to walk all the way back to their car or could you cut that off? Now, when you're cutting with, it's just easier to leave that in, honestly.
Well,
it's 1975, yeah, then you have to like
cut out actual frames.
And it could be not that big of a.
And I will say you are right about that, but I will say the opening scenes, because you have those there, like I'm just gonna lay it out flat. Like at this point, and the demarcation line is Goodfellas. It's literally that movie where, sorry, dude, Martin Scorsese decides I'm going to change pace in this movie.
Thanks a lot, Martin.
And the rule was you never change pace in a movie. You always keep the same paces in movies until 1990 when he does Goodfellas and he has Ray Liotta take cocaine. He speeds everything up until he slows it down later. That was actually revolutionary. That like broke rules of what you were supposed to do in movies. And so I will say
he saw that in some indie movie though.
It's possible. It's possible. But that's definitely the the one that popped.
Movie was.
I know
forgotten.
You want to cut out his leg, so I'll give you that opportunity. But like that is how movies were made through the 80s too. Like Weird Science is paced the same all the way through. Yeah. It's not like super fast, but it's like medium paced all the way through, right? Like stuff happens not at like a breakneck speed, but it's not slow either. Like everything is sort of paced the same. That's how they edited back then. So if you're going to have a lot of scenes where you're like hanging on things and studying things and thinking about things, then you're going to pace the entire movie slower. I mean, could they have broken those rules? Sure, but I don't think anybody thought of it. Like, it's easy to say you could have done this, but like, if nobody's done it before, it's kind of shitty to be like, well, you should have invented it. You know what I mean? Like, how do you rate Stepford Wives, Carl?
I'd say probably excellent minus. It was really good. It worked. Man, those men are never good at any point, are they? Even the husband is like one of the first things he says is like when, to bragging about the fireplace, and he's like, it's my right as your husband to get to bang you in front of a fireplace now that I own a fireplace. And I'm just like,
I can warm my ass,
dude,
by it.
Walk this out of this guy's ass right fucking now. Because she was beautiful too. She was like beautiful. Like stunning.
Catherine Ross from The Graduate.
Stunning.
When your most redeeming quality about a character is his chest hair, you might want to rewrite your character.
You know, oh, here's another thing that I thought was really funny is before I even saw the guy, I knew he was balding.
Yeah.
Knew he was going to be balding because like – this guy, guy is going to be a pinnacle of insecurity. That is what is going to be this man's driving force, is insecurity. And what better way to depict a man as in depths of insecurity than with male pattern baldness? That's like a classic depiction.
You know what's
thing.
Funny? So like when I was watching that, the husband's name is Warren. And I'm like, there's never been like a Warren that's like a good looking guy. And then I think, wait a second, Empire Records. The kid was Warren.
Warren Beatty.
He wasn't really Warren Brandon.
That wasn't his real name.
No, but they called him Warren.
Warren Beatty is kind of a raisin man. He kind of looks like he's a California
raisin.
He was
for sure a sex symbol at that time, though, like in the 70s.
No, but he was still – I never really thought Warren Beatty was a good-looking man. Like,
that's fine.
No, I mean, like –
You were not a tastemaker when you were two, so.
Who's he married to? Susan Sarandon or something?
No, he married his co-star in Bugsy. I'm trying to remember who that was.
Wasn't he with Madonna for a while?
I don't think so.
That's Guy Ritchie.
But it's not entirely.
No, it was before
improbable.
Guy Ritchie.
Like the thing with Warren Beatty is like not only was he a sex symbol and like a really famous actor from the 70s on, but he was also a very successful producer.
Yeah.
So he could make a lot of careers. So you had all
he
of
produced
that going.
All sorts of shit.
And who's the one in American Beauty? The wife in it. No, that's not it. Well, while we're thinking, Annette Bening. Got it.
That's who.
Yeah,
it is.
That he was at least married to her for a while. He's one of those dudes I wouldn't be surprised if he married multiple people. But how do you rate Stepford Wives?
Excellent minus. It is a fantastic. What's the word I'm looking for? Feminist. Not so much message. However, I cannot look past the fact that it has dated racially. There's only literally the two black actors at the end, from what I remember. The old lady dropping the N-word.
The soft N-word, not the...
I don't think
there's such a thing in the 70s.
No, there's the double G and there's the...
I understand what you're saying. However, I believe that those words hold equal power. It's an age difference.
There's a reason I'm not saying the word. It really does. I mean, it's definitely a derogatory term.
Yeah.
So
No, you're right. There's a lack of people of color in this movie that would have been very easy to put in.
Yep.
Yeah.
However, that is literally my only strife with the movie is just the fact that racially it is
and
outdated.
It's just not surprising because it's 1975.
Yeah.
But
it's
hard
I think,
to look at a movie from that area and be like, they could have done better. Like they could have done so many.
Yeah, they could have inserted people like a Weird Science where they're just there to either be scary or to get people to drink and have Anthony Michael Hall go up. That was so bad, dude. It's like probably the only movie that John Hughes has had black people in. Like, honestly.
Hey, you know, that one black guy comes back and bartends the party.
Right, yeah. To threaten people and to drink punks, alcohol.
And punks the kids and charges the kids a bunch of money, the two bully kids. Bullies. They're not even bullies, dude. They're God, fuck that movie, dude. Just fuck it. Fuck it in its
stupid
face.
I will say right
now. It's okay, dude. One of those kids will grow up to make weapons and destroy people. It's all good.
No, but like, yeah, just the entire Stepford Wives, excellent minus. I stand by it. There is a great underlying meaning to the movie that I think we are still missing in this day and age, unfortunately. Issues that I have with it could easily be fixed by a proper remake.
It might have been. I haven't seen the remake. I'll just say, like, there's elements of it in Get Out and Us.
Yeah.
So
noticeably, Get Out does the thing that I thought the Stepford Wives was going to do, which mm-hmm. is mind control yep. rather than...
And they also have the thing where the main character is a photographer.
Oh, interesting. There really are a lot of parallels, yeah. aren't there?
And the guy is blind. Who, like, so that thing about scooping out the eyeballs you see could apply that. Yeah, there's all sorts of weird connections. But Us is probably more on the nose in the connections just in, like, being replaced completely. Anyway, take it easy. Check out all the shows on the Not Safer Network. Cataloging a galaxy of genre, covering the most influential movies of all time, listen to A Cosmic Void every week. Two movies enter, but only one survives in the weekly movie podcast, Box Office Battle. And every month, hear the final season of the show that teaches the history of television in syndication.